Today's book reading is episode 1 of The Celtic Stone, read by the author Nick Hawkes.
Chris plucked at his shirt, trying to unstick it from his back. The humidity was oppressive. Beside him, the brown water of the river flowed sluggishly. He slapped at a mosquito and wondered why anyone would choose to live in the top end of Australia. Not everyone shared his dour mood. Around him, tourists chattered eagerly and pushed for a place near the railing of the tourists' boat deck. Chris stepped back to make room for a small boy, determined not to miss out on the spectacle. Towards the front of the boat, a man held out a pole from which dangled a chunk of bloodied meat. Everyone waited. Chris felt his mobile phone begin to vibrate in his pocket. His fellow tourists pointed excitedly and exclaimed in hushed awe as a brutal, ugly head emerged from the murky water beside them. Chris had the disturbing impression of two reptilian eyes, unblinking, focused. The vibrating phone was insistent. Chris reached into his pocket. Behind the knobbly head, 5 metres of heavily plated crocodile eased to the surface, terrifying with prehistoric menace. Chris Norman speaking. G'day, mate. Chris recognised the voice of Jim Baxter, chief flying instructor at the flying school where he was training to be a commercial pilot. What's up, Jim? How's the holiday? Overrated. Aren't you catching barramundi? I'm watching a 5-metre reptilian killing machine. If you swim in the water here, they'll kill you. And if you stay on land, they're snakes. Their inland taipan has a venom 50 times more deadly than the cobra. Jim chuckled. Sounds as if you need to get back into the air, mate. And I think I can help. I've been asked to find a pilot to ferry a Scottish aviation bulldog from Darwin to Alice Springs. As you're already up there on holiday, I thought you'd like the gig. You're joking. Chris covered his other ear and bent down to better hear what was being said. Straight up, mate. It's been bought by the Central Australian Aviation Museum. They've got a motley collection of World War II pieces, and they've bought a Bulldog Series 120 to make their collection a little bit more contemporary. It's fully aerobatic. Are you interested? Expenses only, I'm afraid, but the museum will send you back here to Adelaide on the GAN. There was a gasp from the people around him. Chris had a vague impression of the massive reptile leaping out of the water. By rail? Gold class? Yes or no? The tour operator spoke over the tannoy. That's 1 ton of crocodile leaping out of the water as far as its back legs, folks. Unusually, it's managed to take the meat at the first grab. So that's it for today. Hasn't it been a great spectacle? Chris groaned. You blighter, you've caused me to miss a $100 spectacle. Yes or no? There was never any doubt. Yes. Good, I'll email the details. He paused before continuing. And Chris, it's a long flight for a small plane. Don't do anything silly. I won't. It was only a small lie. Chris checked the altimeter. 5,000 feet. Fine. He stretched wearily, grateful to be near the end of the final leg of his flight to Alice Springs. He glanced at his flight plan to refresh himself on the approach procedures to the airport. As he did, he couldn't help but grieve the fact that the delightful, fully aerobatic aircraft he was flying would shortly be shackled to the ground as a museum piece. She was a thoroughbred and deserved better. He glanced at the fuel gauge. 14 gallons of fuel remaining. The beginning of an idea suggested itself. He smiled. A pity to waste it. Chris banked his aircraft and headed southwest to ensure clear airspace. Let's put you through your paces just one last time, old girl. Let's see what you can do. Below him, the majestic ranges and gullies of the McDonald Ranges stretched to the horizon. Chris knew little about the area other than that the Aboriginal watercolour artist, Albert Namajira, came from somewhere near here. He shuddered. He could keep it. Nothing he could see of the harsh Australian outback commended itself to him. It was hot and harsh, and he'd seen far too much of it. He tightened his five-point harness, checked the airspace was clear, then eased the throttle fully open. The 6 feet, 2-inch diameter Hartzell propeller howled angrily in front of him. The hunter stood on the cliff top holding his spears. He was perfectly still, perfectly balanced, with one leg cocked sideways to allow a foot to wedge against the opposite knee. Like an egret at a waterhole, he watched for movement that would betray his prey. He knew he was now close, but the long chase had brought him to a strange place. He felt his strength begin to slip away like water seeping from cupped hands. Schooled by habit, he fingered the winged stone that hung around his neck. He wanted to draw out its strength, but it gave him no comfort. The fact remained, he had come to the edge of his country, his language group. Every step he now walked would take him further from his place, further from the songs of his people and the land that defined him. He gazed east across the unfamiliar Rocky Mountain ranges. This was Walla Walla, caterpillar dreaming, and he did not know its stories. And as a man is only truly a man when he understands his story and the songlines of the land around him, he was ill at ease. Deliberately, he conjured in his mind a picture of his grandmother. She had come from the Walla Walla and could speak Walpin, so she would know. Sing to me, grandmother. A moment passed, and he was a child again, and the voice of her singing came low and faint to his ears. As he strained to listen, the chant became louder. She sang stories of her childhood, of the giant caterpillars which had made the massive ranges, and of the emu feet of the sky god that had created the canyons which patterned its red flanks. All too soon the song ended. "Please, grandmother, sing me some more." She smiled. "Ah, hungry child." And after a pause, her flat monotone began again. Her chant told him that the canyons he saw held pools of water left by the mother of the moon when she wept for her stolen child. All too soon the chanting stopped, and there was silence. "Now go to sleep, child." But he would not sleep, not yet. He searched the landscape, watching, for he was Kadaicha, assassin. He'd been chosen by the elders to hunt Monkateringa for the crime committed against his sister. He had been hunting Monkateringa for 5 days, but each day had put him further from his people. He ached to be back amongst them. Seeking their strength, he called them to mind and waited for them to come into his heart. Ah, he could feel them now. He could see the men stalking kangaroo and wallaby. They were strong, silent, deadly. He drew closer to his people's camp and saw the women using sticks to dig up yams, lizard and honey ants. The naked, tousle-haired children were helping, some prizing witchetty grubs from the roots of the acacia. One woman shouted angrily at two young boys as they ran away from their work to play at throwing heavy-headed play sticks through the grass to see which one would slide the furthest. The hunter reached for the winged pendant around his neck. It was a stone like no other. He was in awe of it and didn't understand its power. Even during his initiation, its mystery had not been fully revealed to him. He had simply been given it by his birth father, who in turn had been given it by his father many years before. It was the sacred stone of his tribe's medicine men, and it was said to be more powerful even than the magic Atnungara stones of the medicine men to the north. Yet the winged stone held the secret of its power close. Even his grandfather did not know the story of its carved heart and outstretched wings. Only that it was the symbol of a very powerful god, perhaps older, he said, than any dreaming he knew. The hunter shivered and wished for the thousandth time that he did not have the burden of having to wear it. Laying his spears on the ground, he pulled at a bunch of dried grass and wove it crudely around the winged stone. It was best not to provoke the local spirit beings with what he wore. Looking east, he noted the dark straight line at the base of the great walls of cliffs, and seeing it made him even more uneasy. It told him he was getting closer to white man's business. Their straight tracks scarred the landscape, uncaring of whose land they walked on, uncaring of any dreaming. The white man was strong, and his father had always insisted that his people have nothing to do with them. His people's culture was 1,000 generations old, and they were not free to change it. They could not despise the way of their ancestors. Their spirits guarded the waterholes, and without water there could be no life. It was hot. The old men had talked about the recent hot summers and wondered about it. They had asked his father to inquire of the ancestor spirits. The hunter flinched, losing his train of thought as he heard a distant sound. It was like that of a hornet seeking out its prey. He looked at the sky. The white man left his marks across the sky as well. How could they do that? How could they make smoke straight as a spear fly across the sky? He glanced down at the shanks of his own two spears. They were straight. He had selected the wood with much care and taken great pains to straighten them well by heating the shanks over a fire and bending them into shape before they cooled. He was proud of the result. His spears would fly true and kill. Killing. He had seen death. Death was part of living. But to kill a man, that was different. Again he grasped the pendant with his free hand and felt the string of twisted grasp fibres press into the back of his neck. He turned these thoughts over in his head, knowing that outwardly he must show no sign of what he was thinking. He must remain impassive, guarding his thoughts from any spirit being that might be watching. Flies fought to find what moisture they could from his mouth and nostrils as he scanned the landscape for signs of his quarry. The sound came again. The hornet was angry now. It was close by, agitated and changing direction.
The Celtic Stone and other books in the Stone series by Nick Hawkes can be obtained from bookshops and online.